Hey folks, it's Saturday night, the 21st of January 2017. You're listening to episode 54 of the AIH Superfans podcast. I am one of your superfan pals. My name is Alan on Twitter. You can find me at Slip with five eyes, or Slip.
Yo, this is Roddy. I'm a big Poppy Pig City.
This is Brian. You can find me on Twitter.com at Brian from AIH.
And who's our special guest today?
This is Nick.
Yeah, our special guest. Go.
This is Nick. You can find me on Twitter at Nick Lynam.
And it's your first time on this show, so our apologies in advance to you.
Yeah, there goes my brand.
You're going to walk away a lot stupider after this.
He fits right in. He's been banned from so many Facebook groups and blocked by quite a few guys on Twitter, too. So he's good for our brand.
Oh, and we actually compare our blocks on Twitter with each other like they're hockey cards.
Yeah, I think I'm up there with you guys.
So. But there's still some key ones that I don't have. All right, let's talk about the game today. Pappy, you were at the game. Jets win 5-3. Let me just pull up the box score here. I know that I fell asleep for a bit of the second period, and apparently that was the period where the magic happened. Am I right?
And maybe the Pavlik.
When they were outshot, actually 26-11.
In the second period, right?
Yeah.
So let's see. Of course, again, terrible website on NHL.com. So here we go. Jets win 5-3. Who scored here? They got goals from two from Little, one from Wheeler, one from Scheifele, one from Ehlers. So kind of all the top guys scoring and getting in on the points. They were up 5-1 halfway through the third period. And then the Blues got a couple of quick ones to make the score look a little bit more respectable. And of course, the big story in the second period, Andrei Pavlik sets a Jets record with 25 saves in the second period. So I think quite a bit of good news and a little bit different tone with the team after our show last week. They've won two in a row. So how was the game, Pappy?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good game. Like, I mean, they had a lot of energy from the get-go. That second period, they were dominated. They killed off. How many penalties did they have in the second period there? Do you have that up?
It won't tell me, but it will tell me that they took four penalties overall. Blues were 1-for-4 on the power play.
Yeah, I have to say, Andrei Pavlik's positioning in net today was probably the best I've ever seen him. As far as being in position and tracking the play, he had that one left pad save on, I don't know who it was, but he had a really good push off going across the crease there. He played well. What am I going to say? You gotta admit that he, when he's positioned well, he does really, when he reads the play, he's very effective. As opposed to that paddle save the other night where he didn't get a good push, he was kind of out of position and it was a really fluky goal, fluky save. I don't think he made any fluky saves this game. He was solidly in position and he kept them in the game. Like, if one or two of those saves that he made go in the net, then it definitely changes the momentum of the game, right? So.
Blues got goals from Shattenkirk. He got two, including what looked like the easiest power play goal in the world in the first period. And Paul Stastny got the other one for St. Louis. Copley was a net for them. He just came up from the minors, I believe. And his numbers for the game weren't very good, though he was 2-for-2 in robbing Matthew Perreault.
Oh, yeah. That was an amazing save. He beat the Moose last week, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, do you see the game?
Yeah, I watched the game here at home on TV. Nice to see the older core of Pro, Little, Wheeler really step up early. And Kemper, Pro getting robbed, of course, a few times. He had a pretty solid game.
Brian, you see it?
I was following it on Twitter. And it's finally good to see the older guys step up again.
So with the win, the Jets are now at 22-23-4, 48 points. I think after 49 games. Yeah, that should be updated. Don't always. Yes, it is. Good. They are still 11th in the Western Conference and still giving up games in hand to the teams in front of them. So long way to go, but obviously two wins in a row is better than more losses. So that's good news as well. Did anyone have any thoughts on the game against Arizona from a few days ago? That was a 6-3 win for the Jets.
Arizona is bad. Really bad.
Very bad team. They dominated a very bad team. What was the shots for and against in the second period there? Like a million to three or something like that?
You think that fucking NHL.com will tell me? Is that what you're saying?
Well, one of these millennials should be able to tell us. You guys are all full of numbers, right?
Full of something, these millennials. Don't have them, Steve. Here we go. Let's see. Box score should just tell me, so I'm going to it, but it's just going to give me the overall, I think. Yeah, so we have... It's just, here we go. Overall shots were 39-33 Jets in that game.
But the shot attempts was like 50-20 some, or not even. They had 50 shot attempts in the second period or something like that.
But Arizona is, in fact, a bad team. That's
they're a horrible team.
Confirmed.
That's analysis from us. So... Other things of note with the points that people have put up today, I'm just pulling up stats for the Jets now because some people are starting to get some pretty nice numbers overall, at least on the top end. Scheifele with a goal today. He's got 21 now, tied for the team lead, 45 points in 46 games. Ehlers at 42 points. Blake Wheeler. He's got 15 goals now. Patrick Laine, of course, I think I read on Twitter, he will be cleared for full practice starting tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow.
He
might be good to go on Monday.
Yeah, and Ryan Little, don't look now, but he's got 10 goals, 21 points in 26 games. He's actually a 0.81 point per game guy, which puts him at right now at number three on the team. So... despite missing a bunch of time, having himself a pretty good season. Even Trouba, right? Like, lots of assists. He's a half point a game. So, you know, not too bad at the top end here. But today's game was definitely all, on the score sheet, top-line guys. I know that I saw a few shifts from that at the time. What was it? Lowry, Armia, Matthias?
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of nice shutdown shifts, right?
Yeah, and they can't finish.
In the third there, they had a lot of ozone time in the third that was just killing the clock.
They couldn't get the sixth attacker on because that line had them hemmed in there pretty good.
Yeah, for like almost 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, for sure. I was looking for Hutton to, I mean not Hutton, but whoever was in net to get a chance to get off the ice, but no, they kept them hemmed in there pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think the Blues were able to pull their goalie until there was under a minute left, and that's got to make a big difference.
It was like 50 seconds left. When
Especially in a two-goal game, that's no time at all.
Yeah. Other things to note in this game, Drew Stafford was not playing in the third period, so far undisclosed. I think they said lower body injury. And so they needed to fill a spot on the top line in his absence. So Andrew Kopp gets the spot?
Apparently. Nick Pitam continues to watch with Thorburn on the bench as Kopp takes the spot.
That's disgusting, actually.
I
don't understand it at all.
Were you actually disgusted at the game?
Yeah, well, how does that even happen? What has Andrew Kopp done to warrant the playing time? Like they put Nick Ehlers on the fourth line when you're in the Phoenix game and put him up there, and then now Stafford goes on and he's the first one. Like, what has Andrew Kopp done? Can anybody tell me what he's done?
My question is, what has Nick Pitam done to piss off the coaching staff so much?
But it's twofold though, right? It's twofold.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, Patan's getting the power play time, great. But, you know what? Punishing him by playing with Thorburn is bad enough. Now he's got to see Andrew Kopp get put up there. Like, I can see the narrative that they want to keep him in the middle. Okay, maybe. Maybe.
If he's a staple on the power play, why wouldn't he be the first guy up with injury, is my question, though.
Because it's the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah. Palmer's logic.
He doesn't have enough grit or size to be put up there.
So in terms,
he's not the hard nosed guy, hard working guy. You gotta bring a lunch pail and a hard hat to work to get any respect from Paul Maurice.
In terms of minutes played, at least across the forwards, I'm seeing a little bit more even distribution than I'm used to seeing, at least for today's game. So Patan, despite not getting that promotion to the top line, played 11 minutes and 35 seconds. Andrew Kopp played 1 minute more, 12 minutes and 34 seconds, and 2.5 of those minutes were penalty killing. But the only Jets forward with under 10 minutes today is, can anybody guess?
Chris Thorburn.
So Chris Thorburn with 7 minutes and 40 seconds. But otherwise, most of the players are... up there in minutes a little bit. Now, some of that, again, Stafford not playing a period probably pulls some of that time up. But overall, not the worst spread I've seen.
So here's a funny thing. My daughter and I went to the game, my 17-year-old. And she asked about fighting. And I go, who's the fighter on the team? And I go, number 22. So, I mean, he's only on this team to fight and be a tough guy? And I said, yeah. I go, but he hardly plays. And then she asked me, is he a good fighter? And I said, no. And she's like, well, then what's the point? This is for my 17-year-old daughter, guys. It's kind of funny.
I think you're downplaying. He also makes mixtapes, I believe, in the dressing room.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. Thanks for underselling him. But, yeah, what is he there for? He's there now that, Ehlers is the next one up now that Liney is out, so Chris Thorburn is there to protect Ehlers, right?
Sure.
I guess so.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
we saw what happened in Buffalo, there was no reaction. Like, what's the point?
Of course, the other story from this game and the last game is, and we haven't really covered this yet, we were speculating that Andre Pavlik was going to get called up to the show, and of course, the day after our last podcast came out, lo and behold, here he is. So the Jets call up Andre Pavlik. He's played the last two games. He's got two wins. His save percentage is between the two is average. Not bad, though. We'll talk in a second about how he's being covered because it's a little amusing. Other things that I believe just want to make sure I get them straight here. So now that he's been called up, he can go back down to the Moose without having to clear waivers if he doesn't play 10 games or isn't up for 30 days. So once he crosses one of those thresholds, I believe he has to go through waivers again. That, by the way, that fact on from Mitch Kasprick of Winnipeg Hockey Talk, so shout out to him. Also, Hellebuck can't go down without having to clear waivers. And I don't think Hutch can either. So I think that the Jets, at this point, just have to carry three goaltenders. And if they decide that Pavlik's got to go back down, then they've got, the clock's ticking at this point. So
Well, that's a decision they have to make if Liney's, at the earliest, if Liney's healthy, right?
No, depending on the next score.
He has played fine. Yeah, he obviously fantastic in the second period of today's game, making all those saves. And he has two wins. So before we get into how he's being covered, and I think we're all in agreement with what we think of it, we have to give the guy his due. And honestly, that's all good things so far.
Here's an observation. Now we said it's finally nice to see the old guys contributing, right? So we've heard what Matthew Perreault has had to say about the goaltending, right? Is it a coincidence that their effort and they, the fact that they played well today Is it a coincidence that coincides with Andre Pavlik being in that?
Is it a coincidence or is it the schedule? St. Louis is coming off one of their worst stretches. They ran into Arizona, second worst. I don't know if I'm going to really read into this stretch here.
Well, I'm just trying to get it all out there. Right? Like, who was critical about the goaltending early on in the year as a player? Matthew Perl, right? Was that a sentiment amongst the veteran corps? And what I'm trying to get to is, if that's true, then what does it say about our veterans and their attitude and this core, this older core that we have? Right, just putting that out there, right? Like that veteran core hasn't played as well as they have the last two games for most of the year as a unit, right? Matthew Perreault has finally showed up. He's been absent for a great amount of time, right? So I don't know. You heard that interview? Like, did you guys hear what Matthew Perreault had to say last week about the goaltending?
I read it.
Yeah.
And he was the one who was mostly vocal about it at the beginning of the year too, right? So just interesting to me.
So are you saying that the Jets haven't been trying until the last two games?
I don't know. That's what the narrative has been, right? But the change in net, lack of confidence is why they haven't played well in front of Hellebuck and Hutchinson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some truth that you play differently when you have confidence in the guy in net, right?
Yeah. Like, my thing is, how can they have confidence in Pavlik when he's been the same for 5 years? I don't know.
Well, I mean, if the media can forget what the reality is, and most fans can forget what the reality is, and the management of the team can forget what reality is.
But can you guys hear all that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyways, go ahead.
Well, I just, you know, maybe the players can too. Like, they're probably not worried about what's happened over the last 5 years. They just want the guy behind them to be playing well today. And if they, right?
Especially with the three starts that led up to the promotion, right? Probably the worst stretch we've seen from the goaltending aspect.
But it's the cart before the horse, too, though, right? Like, I mean, how's the play up front to allow those chances on the goaltending, right?
I guess so. But you know, one thing that I'm getting a little tired of is the manipulation of reality to fit your narrative. And what I mean by that is a lot of people, when they're talking about Hellebuck, will be like, well, you know, before those last couple of terrible games, he was doing pretty well, like at least average or a little bit better. And it's like, well, yeah, but those games did happen. They are part of reality and they're part of his stats. You know, like you can't cherry pick with Hellebuck and then turn around and get mad at people who cherry pick with Pavlik.
Oh, this is true. What I would have liked to see happen coming off those two games, even with the promotion of Pavlik, that the message in itself was, try Hellebuck one more time with Arizona. There's no way that team was going to come out and lay another stinker at the feet there and try and get his confidence back against a bad team and then play Pavlik today if he really wanted to send that message. But I guess desperate times call for desperate measures.
I guess so. Now, Lawless, in his segment after the second period, was very adamant that the team is not re-signing Andre Pavlik at the end of the year. God, I hope they don't. Do you think that might change?
Well, I never saw them re-signing Chris Thorburn for 3 years, so I mean, I can't really confidently say that. I can't see it happening.
All right, Pap, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, but hold on.
All right. Go ahead, Brian.
I'm not going to make any guarantees that they don't re-sign him, but who knows anymore with this team?
Yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised if they did go out and sign a goaltender in the free agent market, though.
Well, they may need something. I mean,
Pavlik.
I mean, they got to accept that Pavlik's not the answer, and if they can stick to that, then I think it's it's less of an issue that he's up at this point, because really you're just saying, you know, what we have isn't working. We know that Pavlik may not be the solution, but fuck it, we'll do something different and see what happens. And maybe even over a short period of time, it can make a bit of a difference. Whatever their end goal is, I don't know, because it shouldn't be playoffs. If they can, get something back for Pavlik when it gets closer to trade deadline, then that's something, right? So, you know, who knows? Like, you know, I guess they don't have anything to lose because they don't have anything to win.
Today very much could have been an audition with St. Louis and their goaltending struggles.
Yeah, very much could have. But of course, you have to put up with all of the crap that people put out there in terms of Pavlik, you know, like, you know, two games he's doing well. And it, you know, I wanted to tweet about it, but then I amazingly decided not to. But my thought was, you know, Pavlik's had good stretches, like really good stretches before. He had a couple of good games right now. And in the future, he's going to have a good stretch. He's going to have a few of them for sure. But if you keep judging things on small sample sizes, then you're completely missing the point here. Pavlik, he's got a, you know, I wouldn't take a bet with somebody that Pavlik could have amazing stats over a 5-game period, because he can. But if you want to bet me over the course of half a season, I'll take all bets.
Yeah, like, this is vintage Pavlik. I tweeted this out before, right? He's had stretches like this. He's been brilliant. We have to admit, like, that last week of the season, his play carried the team to the playoffs, like, regardless, right? He helped the team make the playoffs because he had one of those classic Pavlik hot runs. The problem is he has very, very cold runs as well, right? He's a very streaky goaltender. And this is what we get out of him. Everybody was enamored with Andrei Pavlik that first year. He was literally MV Pavlik that year because of how he stood on his head and how athletic he was and the saves that he made and how he kept them in games that they had no business being in, right? But 5 years of knowing that, you know, for every 7 games that Pavlik has that are really good, he's going to have 3 really bad dogs and 6 other very, very less than mediocre games, right? So, but we know that. We've seen that he has gone on these runs. And the logic of, yeah, maybe bringing him in here to get on a run and turn the team around, maybe that makes sense. But long-term, it doesn't make sense for Hellebuck's development. Like, if there were any 2 games that could have been really big, soft games for Hellebuck to rebound and gain his confidence back, it was the last game with Arizona and today's game against St. Louis against a third-string goaltender, right? But
here's the question I have. Is it really believed that he was called up to go on a hot stretch to take him out of playoffs, or is this just a breather for Hellebuck to sit back, try to figure himself out before getting back out there?
Well, he had already sat 2 games, right?
He had a little bit. I don't think, you know, I think at this point it's probably a breather for both goaltenders that are up there and for the team, because we've had a pretty, you know, a decent enough stretch of time between Hutchinson and Hellebuck where things haven't really been going well in net, and Hutchinson's been worse, right? So if anything, maybe you're calling up Pavlik to be the backup to Hellebuck. So he's going to play a couple of games now to give him a breather, and then hopefully, you know, maybe they rotate between the two of them.
That's exactly where I'm at with it, too.
Yeah. Well, that's a narrative that I don't know. Go ahead. Like, Hellebuck hasn't been the problem. He's 3 games over 500, and he just fell to 907 after 2 really, really bad games, right? Hutchinson's been a really shitty backup. Like, we haven't had anybody to rely on, you know, to give Hellebuck any type of rest, right? But that's a narrative that I don't appreciate coming out of Lawless. Like, with that article that he wrote about the goaltending, the very next day he says it's all about Hutchinson in the backup position rather than Hellebuck. But how does that make sense, right? How do you flip-flop like that? Like, he flip-flopped the day after Craig Button took them to task. Like, to me, calling up Andrei Pavlik is really a screams more of an act of desperation to me, but whatever.
we were talking a little bit about goaltending, and you'd mentioned before we recorded that there's a narrative that goaltending's been the biggest problem on the Jets, but Craig Button seems to disagree. He came on to TSN 1290 this week, and in a segment, he basically, like, laced into the coaching of this team, right? Like, he didn't hold back whatsoever and said, like, look at all the things that are wrong with what's not happening on, you know, special teams and undisciplined play. So this is all, coaching stuff, and that the coaching is the problem on the team. And, I heard the segment, and the boys in Winnipeg didn't have a heck of a lot to say in response.
Yeah, they lost his call temporarily.
I saw that too.
Temporarily.
That was probably Chipman hitting the dump button from his, you know, he's got, it's like the red phone. He's got that in his office somewhere, and he's, you know, picks up and he's like, dump, dump.
Like, there's somebody tweeted something. I think it was a very, very big Pavlik supporter. He tweeted that the Jets were in the bottom quartile for six categories, only one of them being goaltending, right? So if five of those six stats are team stats, how do you only blame the goaltending? Like, how do you blame the goaltending for your crappy penalty kill? How do you blame the goaltending for your undisciplined play and taking the most penalties in the league? Like, it's bollocks. Like, discipline comes from where? Where does team discipline come from? It comes from leadership. Like,
I don't know. It feels like with this team over, you know, like from the very beginning, you know, take a wheel and spin it every couple of weeks, and wherever it lands is your latest problem. If it's not the coaching, then it's the leadership. If it's not the leadership, then it's the goaltending. If it's not the goaltending, then there's made up ones like the schedule. There, you know, there's injuries. There's, you know, all sorts of stuff. But it's like, it just pick one, and that's, you know, are we always talking about trying to figure out what's wrong with this team?
They're the Atlanta Thrashers, and they suck. Number one, when they first came here, and we had a brand new coach. They never coached well, had like a cup of coffee with Columbus as an interim coach, as our head coach. Not only that, we had a greenhorn for a GM and an ownership group that's never been in the NHL level, right? So this is what gets me about this whole narrative about it's goaltending and this and that, or it's the process. Well, guess what? The brain trust and the ownership of this team have never won anything. So how can you trust the process of a team that hasn't gotten anywhere in the National Hockey League? So is it from Shovel Dayoff, who is a rookie GM? Is he the one who is the mastermind behind the plan? Well, if it's not him, then it's the ownership. The ownership that, you know, ran a AHL affiliated with AHL team affiliated with the Vancouver Canucks for years. So tell me where the knowledge and where the experience is from this group here that's in charge of the Jets. Where does it come from? And what type of process and what type of system do they really know, or do they have to ensure that we have a winner? Okay. The leadership has been weak right from the beginning. Noel wasn't that great of a coach. We had the Atlanta Association here as a core, and we really haven't dismantled it. We made one trade to take away two key cogs of that Atlanta core. That was Bogo and Kane. And the rest of the people that have been with that Atlanta Association have either expired. They've just expired. As an asset.
Can you honestly say that the remaining Atlanta guys, or the big four that I think about being Wheeler, Little, Buff, and Ensign, are the issue, though?
Like, I don't know if they're the issue, but they're part of the issue. But we, at one point in time, you have to admit, or you have to come to grips with the fact that they haven't led this team to anything. Good, bad, or indifferent. Whether you like them as players or not, the combination of the four, the Bufflin with his personality and his penchant for roving and everything else, right? And not to say, you know, Blake Wheeler has been streaky as a player forever since they came here, right? I'm not saying that they're bad players, and I'm not saying that I don't love them as Winnipeg Jets, But in this incarnation as Winnipeg Jets, they have not done anything. Now, you look at...
How many teams in the NHL are led by one line, though?
You're right. But now I'd argue that this team has way more forward depth than they've had in a long time. And I'd argue, too, that there's a big disconnect from Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, Matthew Perreault, and then the emerging core. There's a big gap between the two, right? You've got guys that are 30-plus, and then you've got guys that are 22 years and younger.
Yeah, but that's not abnormal, is it?
No.
I don't see that as abnormal.
No, but if you take a look at a team like Toronto, where they had a monumental shift in what was in the locker room, and they put all their eggs and they put all, you know, the effective core in its youth, right? There aren't really any big holdovers in that leadership group in Toronto, right? The big difference is they got rid of their top defenseman, their leading scorer, and they brought in a coach that knows how to win.
Well, was Phaneuf really their top defenseman with Riley and Gardner there, though?
But you can't tell me that he didn't have an influence on that locker room.
Well, he should have. He was their captain.
Well, he should have. That's exactly my point. Right now, Jacob Trouba is their number one defenseman on the Jets, right? But you can't tell me Dustin Byfuglien doesn't have a big stranglehold on the atmosphere in that locker room.
All right,
Pat. Yeah, but the atmosphere and on-ice play are two different things, no?
Well, I guess. I don't know. All I'm trying to say is this. Like, you have Blake Wheeler that's expiring in a couple of years. You have Brian Little. Are they going to be parts of this team? Are they both going to be parts of this team? No, I don't think so. What type of return could you get for Brian Little at this point?
This is a different conversation, though, in my opinion.
Well, it's all part and parcel because we're talking organizationally and for this franchise, right?
Yeah.
So are we really saying that the Jets should have been a playoff team this year?
I think so. I have no problem saying it. I think they should have.
Definitely closer than they are right now.
They should have been a borderline team.
They would have been. Yeah, they would have been a bubble team at best. Can we admit that they would have been a bubble team at best?
Well, I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't say that. Like, I was more so thinking like they weren't going to be a bottom feeder. And I mean, you know, they won a couple of games, but if you look at the overall standings, they're still a bottom feeder in the league, right? They're not in that 20-16 range yet, and that's where I thought they'd be.
Well, that's what I'm 100%
saying. 100% they have underachieved. Yes.
Did we peg them to be a playoff, like in the playoffs, by being in the top three in the Central, or being by at best?
I had them as a wild card.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. They're at best a wild card team. At best a wild card team.
How is that on Wheeler, Little, Buff, and Ensham, though, when those are still some of your biggest contributors?
All right, I'm going to be that guy again, because I don't think it has anything to do with those players that have been mentioned. I think it's more so.
I don't think so either.
Like, when you talk about what Toronto did, and you know, maybe what Columbus did as well, and what some other teams do is, you know, you look at your players and you say, and especially the guys who are a little bit older, though occasionally you look at a younger player too, and you say, they have all the talent in the world. They're a wonderful, they're contributing to our team. You don't even have to say that they're not putting a contribution in. But you look at the mix of your team and you say, this isn't working. What I've got in front of me isn't working. And so you can do two things. You can tinker with a couple of things, or you can detonate it. And Toronto looked at their mix and they said, like, they traded their best player. Phil Kessel was their best player. And instead of saying, hey, we've got Kessel and we need to build around him, and we have Dion Phaneuf, whether, you know, I don't think he's the same level of player as Phil Kessel was, but he was the captain of the team. And they looked at those guys, and instead of saying, we need to build around these guys, they said, it's, we need to start all over, and these guys need to go. And Toronto, in the short term, is a worse team without Phil Kessel, but, And the Jets will be a worse team, or would be a worse team, without those four top guys. But you've got to look at it and say, we can't have it both ways. We've either got to blow it up or we're going to keep going like this because the tinkering isn't working. It hasn't worked for 6 years.
I completely agree with you there.
But that's exactly my point, though. Like, where are these guys going to be in 2 to 3 years? If Blake Wheeler and Brian Little were, say, 26 and 27, it'd be a different story. But they're not. They're not. Your emerging core right now who's going to carry your team for the next 5 years are around the 20 to 22 years old and younger, right?
I'll take it even back a year. If you were projecting this team to compete this year, why is Dustin Bufflin at 31 signing a 5-year deal?
If you listen to this podcast before the start of last season, we were all calling for them to trade both of them.
Yeah. There was a bidding war. There's teams lined up. I was all for trading Bufflin.
Absolutely.
I didn't see us getting Line A. I didn't see us making a step forward this year. Obviously, fortunately, that happened, and they re-signed Buff. I know management's selling the idea that, oh, we didn't see the team being competitive this year because of youth. I don't buy that for a second, though. You don't sign a 31-year-old defenseman to a $7.6 million deal at age 31 to say, okay, well, we're looking 2-3 years down the line now. I don't buy that for a second.
Well, what's scary to me is they did that because Andrew Ladd turned down the 6x6 deal that they offered him earlier in the year. And that only happened by chance. That only happened as a result of Andrew Ladd turning down the big fat contract that the Jets offered him earlier on in the year. That's the scary part. That's the scariest part of it all, right? Right.
But anyways, does a team that projects 2 to 3 years away actually sign that deal? I don't think so. I think this was supposed to go a lot better, and the PR spin is working at full force right now. But I agree. If you're looking 2-3 years away, you do got to consider trading those four guys we talked about. I just didn't think that they've been the reason why we aren't winning with Mike.
But they've got to contribute to that, though. They've got to contribute to their lack of effort. Like, we're talking effectively the leadership of this.
Those guys can't trade themselves. If it's not working, there's one person who's
responsible. But it's not working. But it's not working for what reason? It's either the coach or the leadership.
Wheeler's been their best forward.
Yeah, but we can't trade them. They, you know, if they're not performing and it's consistent and it's 6 years of this stuff, who's responsible for it? It's the fucking general manager that's responsible for doing something.
It's Chipper. This organization is loyal to a fault.
Well, too bad then. Then they're going to keep being like this. They're going to keep having all the talent in the world, and we're going to scratch our heads for another 6 years.
And what's concerning to me is all the talk and all the babble right now is that Pomo's going to get extended.
Oh, I've heard that too, right? Like, no doubt that he's getting extended.
So now the narrative is, okay, they're not a playoff team this year, but if they don't make the playoffs next year, look out. Well, how, like, that was Lawless speaking pregame today, right? Now, how does that make sense when you've just been talking for the last week that Pomo's going to get extended this summer? So you're going to extend him this summer and then say, okay, if you don't make the playoffs, you're done? How does that make sense?
On a management topic, too, next year is Little's last year, I believe. How do you not listen on him this summer after another bottom five season?
How do you not
making the playoffs without a piece like that or a piece like Wheeler if they did have to move those guys?
You know what? The saving grace is we've got Nick Petan up the middle, and I don't think there's that big of a drop-off if we trade Little for some good young prospects even this season. You hear what I'm saying?
Especially with Kopp ready to step in on the top line.
Well, you know what?
There's a pretty big drop between Little and Petan right now. I'm not saying in the future there is, but right now, there's a pretty big drop.
Well, there's even Matthew Perreault who's not playing center right now, and you know you got the next captain in Adam Lowry up the middle, like organizationally, anyways, right? Well, I'm just saying, what can Brian Little net this year at the trade deadline? And who at the trade deadline this year will have somebody or some assets to trade? Who knows? You know what? If a Brian Little can bring in a nice young left-handed defensive prospect and a roster player now, who knows? and a first-round draft pick. You know, look what happened last year.
Keep going. Keep going. And a superstar in the making just, and five prospects.
Who knows?
Rossi and Kessel.
No, seriously, what's the market on a Brian Little right now?
I have no idea.
With Wendler left enough. At what, $4.5 million?
Yeah, cheap. What did Andrew Ladd get us last year? Marco Danil and
the first.
Logan Stanley.
Well, they got the first. It could have been used differently, but they got the first.
Yeah. So and that's Andrew Ladd, a left wing, with 2 months left on his contract. Like what'll Brian Little get us this year? That's all I'm saying. Like,
think about it.
I would be looking at a team like Anaheim right now, where rumors have them talking Larson, Theodore, Montour, plus they don't have the cap space though either.
All right, guys.
And you got to look at expansion draft. But.
Yeah,
we're a salty crew for coming off two wins, by the way.
Do you expect any different?
No.
This is our brand. What did you expect?
Arby isn't even here, of course. You know, the Jets won the last two games, so he's busy.
Between Lineham and me and you, I think we have just as much hate as Arby.
All right,
he shoulders the load for sure, but I think we're right up there.
All right, do you guys want to get into a bit of fun stuff?
Sure.
Sure.
We got two hashtags that we have to review. One was, we asked people last week or in the last show to tell us their ideas for Jets fan rewards that the team should get out or give out. We got a couple of ideas here, so I just wanted to read them because we promised we would. I haven't seen them yet, so I don't know if they're good, but I'll read them anyways. Jet Strolling at Jet Strolling says, I got a Jets reward suggestion, a skate sharpening done by Craig Heisinger. let's see here. Solo at Sagasal, Sagasal. 5,000 points, you get to play the power play. 10,000 points, you get to play a net. I think that should go the other way around. 50,000 points, you are locked in Chevy's office for 24 hours and have full access to his phone and computer. Where he has no messages and no emails, probably.
He's probably still on dial-up with a rotary phone, so that's probably how he communicates.
Hanger Hockey at Hanger _ Hockey, a brick wall mural of Andre Pavlik. Brett Olson at Brett Olson 2, Stafford traded and Connor called up when you reach 10,000 points. Let's see, what's this one? Hanger Hockey again. Debut album of Jacob Trouba entitled Held Up. Main single is True Bad So Sad. At Jets Superfan Rewards. What is this? Okay, let's try this one. Ryan Nother at Ryan Nother. A magic violin strung with hairs of Thorburn, stained with blood and sweat of Stew, and sealed with the tears of Noel Past.
That's got to be the winner.
That's the winner. Ryan, you're the winner. You win nothing. But congratulations. Because we don't have anything to give away yet. Because we don't have a sponsor, Pappy.
As of yet, it's working on it.
All right. And then, of course, Ask the Superfans is the other thing. And use the hashtag Ask the Superfans if you want to send us your questions over at AIH Superfans is the handle. And I should also mention, of course, we're affiliated with Arctic Ice Hockey. So go to arcticicehockey.com for all your Jets fun. A few from Hanger Hockey. though a couple of them are about Pavlik, so I'll just read one of them. Do the fans' cheers for Pavlik annoy you?
Puts up a 909 and there's a Pavi chant going on. Yeah, that's pretty annoying.
They don't. I think in the context of the cheers, it depends. If Pavlik's net during a game and he makes a big save or he's playing well during that game, like, of course you're going to cheer him. He's your goalie. I cheer too, right? I don't roll my eyes every time that Pavlik makes a save, but when there's a narrative about what he is to the team, that's where I get annoyed.
Yeah, in game, like, I could see a big section of the fan base cheering Andrei Pavlik when he was announced last game. And, you know, when he makes a big save, obviously, like, I'm a Winnipeg, and that's something people lose sight of. I'm a Winnipeg Jets fan first, right? Of course, if he's making a save, I'm going to cheer it and I'm going to appreciate it. I'm not wishing death on him or hoping that.
Wow, that's nice.
Wow.
This escalated maybe, quickly. You know, maybe. I don't want to rot in hell or anything, but you know.
Honestly, though,
even that, you know, that out of position paddle save, I jumped off my couch. I gotta admit that.
Yeah, and then when you look, today he made a lot of great saves.
I mean, we don't expect when they announce that he's a starting goaltender in the in the pregame ceremonies. You're like, fuck you, boo! Like, of course not.
Like I didn't cheer with the one St. Louis Blues fan in my section when Shattenkirk scored. I didn't stand up with him and start cheering like take that, Patty. No, like that's not me. I'm cheering for the Jets, of course.
Here we go again. Hanger Hockey. This is mainly for you, Pappy. How awkward was it when Pappy personally met with Jim Toth back in November?
It wasn't very awkward at all.
You gave him a couple of phone calls this week, didn't you?
I gave him one phone call, and I said one thing, and then he hijacked my call and then cut me off. Actually, when they hung up on me, I was in the middle of a sentence, and I didn't realize until I heard the dial tone.
That's what we should do to you sometimes on this show.
Probably.
I'll just ask one more thing on the Toth thing, and we can all answer this one. What would each of you tell Jim Toth and Gary Lawless if they're secretly lurking and listening to the podcast, which they are, obviously.
Dude, you guys aren't really that good.
Whoa.
you know what gets me about the both of them is they talk from a position like what they're saying should be held in high regard at all times. Like that's what Toth makes his comments and he'll back it up with, I've been paid to play, to cover hockey for 23 years, so I'm very comfortable with my assessment. And Lawless is the same way too. I mean, he pushes what his opinion is and they don't really take any arguments or any criticisms back at them, and they don't really facilitate communication or debate or conversation.
Nick, what do you think?
I would say something about the subjective nature of their opinions or comments. It seems more team friendly than actually objectively looking at what's going on. Like they're fed a narrative, or that's how it comes off anyways.
Do you hear any of them, Brian? Do you ever hear
them?
Yeah. What do you think?
Not too much, but really they need to, one, let Poppy talk, and two, quit the True North narrative, because all it is just going to make more and more people mad, honestly, because people are getting tired of hearing the True North talking points.
But people will tune in for that, though, because they get angry. I get that, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, Toth kind of made a dig on me by saying, you know, this isn't a podcast, so 5 minutes is all you get. He tweeted at me.
That was pretty good, actually. Come on.
Yeah.
I would say to both of them, when Gary Lawless does his segment and he's trying to convey information, I find that when he's giving reporting on what's happening with the team, it's not that bad at all. You know, I think that it's informative and I think he does a great job. When he's giving, you know, when he's editorializing and making statements during those segments, I'm not as big a fan, and it feels more like homerism than anything else. When he does it, and Toth, you know, I don't, as much as I don't want to give him anything back, I will. You know, when you're hosting hours worth of radio at a time, you can't just sit there and be, you know, spew out facts. Like, your job is to create discussion and talking points. I just wish that there was a little bit more balance there, and I wish somebody like Toth, who's been on the Pavlik bandwagon, it doesn't work in the face of facts, right? And that's what bothers me, is it's a credibility question that I have.
I get that. But he does have 23 years of getting paid to cover hockey.
You know, yeah, well, I mean, again, to both their credit, we do this once a week for an hour, right? And yeah. It's not always easy. They have to do it, you know, a Toth especially has to do it every morning for hours at a time. And he's got overlords. Yeah. You know,
the problem is covering hockey and covering what happened in the hockey game that happened last night and what your opinion of and your assessment and your analysis of what's happened on the ice, they're two drastically different things. If you're a dumbass, doesn't matter how long you've been reporting on what the score was and how many saves the goalie made, it doesn't matter how many years you've been doing that, your analysis is still fucked up because at the end of the day, you're just a dumbass. Like, I'm sorry. But anyways.
More from Hanger Hockey. How do you think Liney's injury affects him aside from being more prone to concussions? I think being more prone to concussion is the biggest deal of them all.
It's huge. It's huge. For that to happen in his rookie season, you know, we'll see what happens.
I'm sure he'll be more hesitant in open ice, and his head will definitely be up this time.
Absolutely.
From here on.
Footsteps.
I'm sure it was not going to be easy coming back from that, but
I bet you, like, with him, the differences may not really be noticeable to the average fan, and if he doesn't get rocked in a few games, I think it just kind of it goes away pretty quickly.
Yeah,
like you don't those instincts don't disappear that the dude has, right?
Well, you know what? It's like a knockout punch. Like it's like a boxer who gets knocked out by a punch he doesn't see. His reflexes and his mannerisms change, and the type of fighter he is can change drastically, right? So it's tough. I don't know. Just especially the way he got hit and where it came from. You know, if it was a hit from behind or something along the boards, it'd be different. But when he's in full flight in open ice, that's kind of, you know what I mean? It's kind of a jarring blow. Like it's literally something that you have no idea is coming. At least if you're on the boards and you've got your back to the play, you can kind of expect something from happening. But when you get hit in open ice like that, I can see how that affects your psyche. Yeah.
We're probably going to start, taking more and more questions about and talking more about trade deadline as March 1st approaches. It's still, 6 weeks away, but, question here. This is from number one, Nick Antropov fan at Hockey Lake 72. Who do you think the Jets will be able to trade at the deadline if we're assuming they will trade people?
If Pavlik, if Pavlik goes on a run, you know, there are quite a few teams looking for that backup for the playoff run. I know that Columbus is in dire need of a backup. So there are other teams out there that might be looking for a goaltender. Hopefully that's the case.
There's been a lot of talk around Matty Perreault's name.
Yeah.
Could be something to watch here.
I mean,
yeah, if they're not going to protect him.
The other day. If they're not going to protect him, you got to get something for him.
Let's see here. We have Ian Dimitru, at Ian Dimitru. Can we now call the Winnipeg Free Press fake news after calling Pavlik's performance near perfect?
Yes.
That was amazing too, right? What was it, a .909? And the article that comes out right now after is Pavlik near perfect. He let in 3 goals and he's a 91% save percentage.
Near perfect, he let in the first shot on goal.
Yeah. Imagine that. Matt Weeb at MW Winnipeg, EMDUBWPG. How long do the Jets run with 3 goalies? Who will be the odd man out? Pavlik extension, question mark.
God.
I think that answer is very injury dependent.
Well, if Liney's back on Monday, they've got to do something, right?
Yeah. And what's going on with Sherratt? Originally, that was supposed to be a short term.
Oh, yes. So then maybe he gets put on IR and that decision doesn't have to be made yet.
No, Sherratt was already put on IR.
Oh, okay. So then, yeah. Something's got to give.
But Stafford went down today, so that could buy time in that regard.
It's got to be Hutch. Hutch has been shit all year.
Yeah. Unless Pavlik gets traded.
Do they? Like, who's in the press box right now? Hutch and Melchiori, right? Is there a third?
No.
Well, there's no forward, right?
No.
No, I don't believe there's a Ford right now. So they should have one roster spot for the time being, even if Laine does come back.
Yeah.
Well, even so, I think Hutch is got to be the one that's sent down. If so, they have to send somebody down.
I think they go risk adverse and send Pavi down. Much to the demise of MVP Pavlik fan support.
It would blow their narrative, though. It would blow everything that they've got going if they come in and he went. So he rifles 5 out of 6.
Well, off. It depends on the results in that time frame, obviously. But if it's much the same after from here on out, it'll be him just because of expansion draft and waiver eligibility. Even though I don't think Hutch would be claimed.
So if he runs the table,
oh, Hutch is going down for sure.
No, but it. Like that last part of that question. If he runs the table and has like a 920 plus save percentage, do they sign
him? That's a fifth round pick.
No, do they sign him?
He'll have us a fifth round pick and it'll be done. He's not staying.
We haven't done that though. We haven't done that in our whole existence. Get rid of a mediocre asset for any type of a return. We haven't done that at all.
Okay, I don't think that this will happen, but I'm going to put the question on the table just to see what the reaction is. Let's say that at the end of the year, they decide they sign Pavlik for 2 years and it's, you know, $2 million a year. And he's kind of, his role is, you know, you're going to be either 1A, 1B, or you're going to be the backup to Hellebuck, who we still think is the future, or somebody else who we sign and get. Then what? Is any signing of Pavlik in any way, shape, or form a problem?
I don't mind that.
My answer is, by the way, it is a problem. But I'm asking the question anyways.
I don't mind that. You know what? If it's shown us anything, like going with two young guys at the beginning.
Well, what does that show us, though?
Well, it's the veteran presence. I don't know. Having a veteran guy there makes a difference. Like, you know, Hellebuck's going to have his struggles. He's a brand new goalie too, right? And okay, so what's the alternative? Bringing Comrie up next year? So a tandem of Comrie and Hellebuck next year? Is that something?
No,
that
but there's going to be goalies available in the summer who have had better careers than Pavlik and probably could come cheaper than $2 million.
Yeah, but we know what we have in Pavlik.
Unless a Bishop or a Fleury, both aren't having their greatest years.
Yeah, but you know what? How are we going to sign a Ben Bishop where at the beginning of the year he was looking like that?
I'm not saying that we're good. I'm just saying you could get a backup for Hellebuck, less than $2 million, who isn't as polarizing as this goddamn fan base.
Let's see. What have I got left here? At Jet Strolling, again, at Jet Strolling, does Pavlik winning create a smokescreen for all the other organizational problems? Who else is worried is losing better?
I'm a bit worried.
That if he wins, it's going
to... Yeah, that they're going to re-sign him, and that just sets a bad precedent for...
Well, he's going to start winning, and Pomo's going to get extended, and Chevy's going to get extended.
See, that's my biggest worry about them winning is the inevitable PMO extension. It's not about Pavlik, it's the PMO extension that really is my nerve wracking.
And I've been saying it on this show for what? How long now? Al? When did we get into the PMO?
It feels like it's been forever.
He needs to go. He needs to fucking go.
Oh. So him, Heidi, Flaherty, take them all.
They all have to go.
Everybody. We need to trade all the players, fire all the coaches, and get rid of the GM.
Look at the continuity on this coaching staff and this front office from day one. Who's changed? Who's left? Nobody's really left. Nick Cambridge is the only one that's left in the coaching staff. Vince Song got moved over and got a promotion to coach of the AHL team. And the only person they fired was Claude Noel. Everybody else is the same. We've had shitty goaltending. Let's have the fucking same goalie coach for 6 years. Our defense has been shit for fucking 6 years. Well, why not give Charlie Huddy another contract? Our power play and our penalty kill has been shit since the beginning. But hey, whatever. It's not the coaching. You got to blame it on the goaltending.
Just a reminder, everybody, the Jets won today 5-2. They're on a 2-game winning streak.
Well, at least now we know that they're going to lose the next game. Yeah. Well, two in a row. Well, so
I actually wrote
on the whole, it's not just a goalie narrative. Everyone should read John Malloy's article on the subject there. Put a little plug in for my buddy.
Yeah, friend of the show, John Malloy. Go check him out. Is he at John Malloy on Twitter? I'll type it in to make sure.
At JMal95, I believe.
Perfect. Yeah, JMal95. Check him out.
Hey, but just to warn you people, he's got facts and numbers, so you know what? You might be averse to that.
So the Jets have, we're almost at the end of our show today, the Jets have two games coming up back to back on Monday and Tuesday with Anaheim and San Jose. And that first game, I believe, against Anaheim, huge ramifications, because if the Jets win, Sad Sack Jets fan makes his return to Twitter.
Yay.
His official go return. Jets, go. Huh?
Go Jets, go.
Yeah, that's the biggest reason to cheer for the Jets on Monday. Anything else before we wrap up for the day? No.
Miss anything? Brian, did we miss anything?
I don't think so.
Bitch about the GM, check. Bitch about the goaltending, check. Bitch about the coaching, check. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
Did anybody keep track of how many times I swore? Because I apparently have a quota that I have to fill.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Who gave you the quota?
Jet Strolling did, I think.
All right.
Or, I'm just supposed to manage that.
I usually make up for it if you fall short.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, folks, if you want to follow us again at AIH Superfans is the handle on Twitter. Find this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Go to AIH Superfans to find it. Or if you just search for AIH Superfans on the old Googles, I think we pop up there too. ArcticIceHockey.com is your source for Winnipeg Jets news and notes, a blog run by Sports Blog Nation. So head over there for more writing from, I believe, one person on this show, Brian, writes. The rest of us can't write for shit. And otherwise, we'll see you in a week. I am at Slip with Five Eyes, or Slip.
I'm Big Poppy Peg City, and if you want to see my daily battles with a certain Pavlik lover, follow me on Twitter.
I'm Brian from AIH, and that's my handle, and I'm blocked by Poppy's friend, so I can't see it.
I'm at Nick Lineham, and I am also blocked, so cut those and send them my way.
I am too. I was the original one to get blocked, and our AIH Superfans podcast is also blocked on a show that this person was on. But yeah, it's blocked as well. Nick, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. And if you'll accept our invites to come back, then you're more than welcome to. And that's it. So until next time, everybody, have a good night and go Jets, go.